Succession number 28147, reel number 8.
First time I'd been returned to the French prisoners of war camp, and I'm starting now from that. Didn't have anything whatever to do there, nothing at all. And I would like to say, point this out. We were all very, very hungry. Not the hungry as you have here, not the hunger that I have here when we want a meal. The kind of hunger where if you saw a little piece of crust in a rubbish dump, you'd get it out and eat it. That is hunger. I never experienced anything like it. And then you might be surprised. We used to lay outside the huts, because it's quite nice weather. And the talk always came round to food. We were starving, and the best thing we could do was to talk about it, I suppose. And then one of them started saying, when this war's over and I get home, the first thing I'm going to have to eat is so-and-so and so-and-so. And then they started round. There was about 6 or 7 of us in a group. There was about 100 British prisoners there. And when we split up, I don't know, in the kind of groups. And the next one he started, and it went round. Everyone was saying what they were going to have. They came to me, they said, what are you going to get, Bill? I said, well, as I feel now, I said, the point is, if this war's over and I'm going home, and my mother knows I'm going, she'll have a meal ready for me. But I said, if I go in on the hop, I said, this is what I should want. That's 3 or 4 gammon rashers, 4 or 5 eggs, a large cup of tea, and perhaps to finish up with a nice slice of homemade cake. One of them said, are you sure that's enough? I said, well, according to my tummy, I said, that isn't enough, not at the moment. Well, we were there, I don't know, quite a time. And then, one night, there was 2 chaps brought in a uniform that we none of us had ever seen. We wondered who they were. Immediately they started to talk, we knew who they were. Yanks. And they called us everything. We weren't able to fight our own war, and they would come to win it for us. There was a Cockney there with me. He got up and he went across to them, looked right in their eyes with one of them. He said, if you don't shut up, he said, I shall shut you up myself. They still kept on. They made no more ado. He fetched them one. And he certainly put it in the right place, because this Yank went flat on his back. He said, that's right. He said, that's one war we've won any rate. Shang got up and they never said another word. And the Germans took them out of our hut, went somewhere, and I don't know where they went or anything. We never saw any more of them. And then there came a time when we were all turned out of there, onto the road. And you've all seen a flock of sheep being drove along the road. That's how we were, all of us. And the Germans guards, they used to have a little box they carried, got their rations in. One of the guards got hold of one of the chaps and told him he'd got to carry it. Now he started to carry it from everywhere. And as we walked along, I looked at the others, and there they were, heads down, looking on the ground, about a yard in front of them. And I thought myself, what a mob to be. Then I realised I was doing the same thing. We'd got no interest whatever in anything. And then this little box kept changing hands. One would carry it a little while and he'd say, yeah, come on, your turn next. And that came to me. And I thought to myself, I don't know, I don't fancy this. This feels a bit hot to me. Though I didn't hang on to it very long. I passed it on to someone else. Well, that carried on through the day till we came to a place, I don't know who, where. And just an open green there. And this German guard then come to get his box of rations. He got his box all right, but his rations were gone. I didn't have any of it, I know that. But you bet your life, how that went round, everyone had a little bit, and it all went. I'd like to have heard, you'd have been there to have heard that German. But he couldn't do anything about it. He didn't know who he gave to. So he was a ration short. Well, we stayed there the night. Then we started off again the next day, just the same. And that happened for several days. And then we came to a night, one night, and they billeted us, or took us in, to a church for the night. I laid down on a pew and went to sleep. But before then, I'd heard the minister get up in the pulpit, and he was talking to them. Well, because I didn't understand what he was talking to, neither did Jack. So we went to sleep on these pews. The next day, we was off again. Then, towards the end of the day, I happened to look back. And as far as I could see in the distance, there was just, you would see the shape of a barrage balloon up in the sky. And I thought to myself, that's about where the line is, I bet. And then we went another day. And that night I looked back again. And that was just before we stopped, when they took us into Hirson, H-I-R-S-O-N. And looking then, I thought to myself, well, those barrage balloons are nearer. They're coming this way. And I thought to myself, when they took us into Hirson, I only hope when in the morning our chaps will be here to take us back. But they wasn't. And then we carried on from Hirson. And we got to Arnden, the outside of Arnden. A-N-D-E-E-N-E. Not the bridge you hear about. This was a small town, about the size of St. Ives, before St. Ives had been built up a lot. And we was on the green just as going to Arnden then, and I never see anything like. There was a sunken road, a low road there, and then a hill practically dead straight up, and on the top of this hill were a row of houses. There was no entrance from there because they couldn't do it. But the front door was on this pass at the back. And as we'd been coming along, if any of the Belgians could get near us to give you a little bit of bread, they used to do so. And I said to Jack, when it's dark, I said, we watch it. We'll nip across the road and up that path and see if we can get some bread. Well, that's what we waited till it was dark. We bided our time and went through the guards, got through there all right, went up this path. Jack said, what are we going to do now? I said, we'll knock at a door and chance it. Well, I knocked on the door, and it was opened by a lady, and she just called us in like that, waving her arms in, and we went in. She shut the door behind us, and then, sitting at a table there was a German soldier. I thought we'd stepped into it all right. But he said, don't worry, sit down. He said, I was a prisoner in Russia. He said, and it's no fun being a prisoner of war, is it? I said, no, it certainly isn't. Well, this lady gave us both a nice big slice of bread each and a pot of ersatz coffee. And this German said, here you are, he said, have some milk. He got hold of a lot of milk, and he poured quite a lot of milk in our cups. Well, after a while, he said, you better be getting back, he says, and get across that road before you get into any trouble. So we came away. And when we got down there, our chaps were all been up the over the road, and they were coming back with large bundles of faggots, what you might kind of pea sticks, all done up together. And they were bringing these back, so we went and got in the crowd. We brought a lot. I don't know whether they were given to us or whether we just helped ourselves. It must have been a deuce of a stack when it started, because all over there we got little fires going, And there was just about four or five of us. After we got a fire going, we laid there all night with our feet around the fire, feet to the fire. And we had enough, so we took it in turns to keep the fire going all night. Well, in the morning, we were all lined up, and then there was a lorry, it wasn't a lorry, it was a horse and wagon. And that was full of little, small loaves of the black bread. Not so big a loaf as our small loaves are here, nowhere near. And they lined us up, we had to go there, and they said, they gave each one of these loaves. And they said, that's 3 days' rations for you. The war's over, you can go just where you like. That was the first inkling we had that the war was over. That was on the 12th of November when we were released. Because we found out afterwards on the armistice they signed, all prisoners of war had to be released within 24 hours. And they certainly kept a bargain where we were concerned. Jack says, where are we going now? I said, well, let's have a walk down in the town and see what's there. And where all the French prisoners went, and even our soldiers, I don't know where they went. I think they went and tried to get back. The Frenchmen had a better chance than what our fellows did, because I did hear that a lot of them going back died on the side of the road. It was silly to attempt it, really. Anyway, we went down the road into there, and when we got into the town, there was a Belgian butcher standing outside his shop. And he said, "Anglais soldat." I said, "Yes." He said, "Come in." Waved his arm to go in. We went in. Took us into a room. There was a long white deal table, scrubbed white and everything. And also, there was a form at the back of it, I can see it now. And also, there was a map on the wall, on a large map. And where the line was, the German line and the British line, and that was there. There was all different pegs they'd got. And Jack and I were trying to work out how far it was away. And we reckoned that was somewhere about 200 miles. Well, it was not, I don't know. Well, little daughter, she brought us both a large bowl of soup each. And that, I think, was the best drop of soup I ever tasted in my life. And I don't think I've tasted anything like it since. I know it's because we were so hungry, anything but it tasted good. But after that, he went out and he come back in and he got a bottle of whiskey. And he said, "I've had this ever since before the war." And he said, "I've always said that when the war ended, then I would drink the whiskey." And he said, "What better time for me to do that is to drink this," he said, "with a company of two Anglais older. Well, he poured us out quite a lot. Jack and I suppose the three of us sank about half a bottle of whiskey. And then he gave us a note on it, and an address. He said, if you go there when it gets nearly dark, he said, they will put you up. But he said, you'll have to leave as soon as it breaks light in the morning. And then you can go back again when it gets dark next night. He said, they won't give you any food because you'll have to go to the town hall where you'll be given some soup once a day. And they will give you a paper and they will stamp it when you have it. Well, we came out of there. I know this much about it. I could see all right, but my legs were very, very shaky. I said to Jack, we should have to sit down before long. I said, I will fall down. He said, that's that whiskey. I said, I know it's the whiskey, all right. I said, we were daft to have it on an empty stomach, really. At any rate, we found out where the town hall was. And then, when it got dusk, we followed the directions this Belgian butcher had given us, and we went to this house. Now I'm going to put this to you. Would you have opened your door to two people like us who hadn't had a bath for over 6 months, had not had a haircut or a shave for over 6 months, and you was absolutely lined with lice? Would you have opened your door and given them a bed? I wouldn't, but they did. And when they showed us up into the bedroom, there was a double bed, clean sheets, queen pillowcases, clean eiderdown. Jack said, we can't get into that, Bill. I said, not as we are, we can't. I said, the best thing we can do is to strip. Because lice do not live on you. Well, they live on your body, but if you take your coat and everything, shirt and everything off, you'll be without lice when you're naked. They're all hanging to your clothes. And I suppose we both of us said I'd seen several thousand on us. So we stripped out and we laid our clothes on the further side of the particle and we went to bed. Well, we carried on and we stayed there waiting for the troops to get near to us, and we were there 10 nights, and then in Arden that morning you see two British soldiers all dressed up, polished up, spurs on. And we went up to them and they told us they were the Lancers and they were billeted in a field at Bonneville. And I said, Well, how far's Bonneville? They said about 4 kilometres. You'll find us in a field. So Jack and I, we went to the lady where they'd been putting us up, and in our way done our best to give them our thanks and blessing. And then we went to Bonneville, and they were right at the other end of a field, and there was an officer, and we reported to him. Said, "A prisoner's just returned, sir." He says, "You look it." And he says, "There's the cooks there." He said, "They'll feed you." And then when the ration lorries come up, he said, "Tonight, you'll go back with them." Well, we went and we sat down at the cooks there, and they gave us as much ham as they could possibly put on a large double, large plate. Plenty of white bread and butter. And real tea, which we hadn't tasted for over 6 months. And then they said, "You can eat that," the cook said, "and you can have as much as you like. But if you take my advice, you won't eat any more than what we've given you, to overload your stomach, because your stomach must be as thin as it possibly could be." He said, "And never take the weight of overfeeding, which you would do. Though if you take my advice, eat what we've given you and leave it." We did that, both Jack and I. And we did hear later on that a lot of the chaps had overfed and had really killed themselves. Well, a lot of the lorries came up, and we got on, and they told us that there'd been orders that no lorry, when it came up to the line, was to go back empty. They were forced to pick up the prisoners of war, because so many had died on their way back trying to get back on their own. Well, we went from there to Nemours. They pulled up in Nemours marketplace, right opposite the station, and then they said, "Come on, out you get. We're going to lay there, make our bed in there. We're going to stay here for the night. Be here tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock. We leave at 6 o'clock. I said, where should we go now? I said, "That's up to you. There's the whole place. And all the mirror said, you go and find a place, get yourself." And when we walked a little way, we found another prisoner. And he said to us, "Make sure you're pretty early there tomorrow morning." He said, "I'm going to be." He said, "There's several about here," he said, "been hanging about, can't get away. Because," he said, "only a certain number can go." So he said, "You want to be pretty early." Well, we went down some steps, and there was an old, I don't know what they use it for, the old place. And it was all open. We went in there for the night. And I said to Jack, I said, "Well, there's no need to worry." I said, "We should know what the time is. because there was a town clock somewhere striking every quarter of an hour. Well, we didn't have a lot of sleep, I know that. I dozed off. I was afraid we should miss it. When it got to 5 o'clock, I said, Jack, come on, we better get round that lorry. So we went, we were the first to get there. But it wasn't long before there was a real crowd of ex-prisoners waiting to get on this lorry. Well, at 5 to 6,